Yeah, he switches gears so fast, I can't keep up. God, you guys are ridiculous. How did that even make, how did that even warrant that reaction?
High five.
That was awkward. Hello, welcome to another episode of the Exit Only Theater podcast. Sean's got the giggles over here. I'm JP
Lee. Man down.
He literally felt like he got shot onto the stairs. I'm JP Lee, and with me, as always,
Adrian Alderette.
And we're here with a 10 Cloverfield Lane spoiler-free review. If we can attempt it, I'm not sure if it's gonna
go over
well. So. Disclaimer for the two people that are in the background. Sorry if we ruin a little bit of it, but we'll try our best. Rachel's special guest for the day is literally just like dismissively, it's fine. It's fine. We're good.
Rachel.
That is not her name.
Two names.
Okay, so let's jump into the way that they marketed it and how J.J. Abrams sold it as a spiritual successor.
Year of Abrams, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been a crazy quarter.
I hate that
for
I like him now.
I was right. Now it's my turn to be right about Zack Snyder again. So we'll get to that episode. But so I want to know from your perspective, did the fact that it wasn't a direct sequel, having just seen the first one yourself,
did you take away?
I remember after watching the movie, we both kind of like looked at each other and like I whispered to you and I said that, you know, hey, this, you know, even though it may not be the first time this kind of a sequel was made, it's definitely something I haven't seen recently. Basically, the movie isn't necessarily, and the marketing campaign kind of hints at it. It's like it's not a direct sequel to the Cloverfield movie, but it takes place within the same world of when the Cloverfield event happened.
Right.
So I think it's definitely refreshing to get a movie like that where you don't have to necessarily rely on characters for a sequel, more of a circumstance.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. And I hope, you know, for a superhero movie, they kind of play with that. And I think, you know, it's hard to do that when you have characters like Batman and whatever. But for science fiction and the genre, it's cool because you could do stuff and have multiple storylines, kind of like anthologies, and that's really cool. Yeah.
I like that they mix. They don't just do a sci-fi movie. This is a sci-fi movie mixed with sort of an abduction thriller, which is also another level to it, kind of plays with it. It's similar to me to what I think of as American Horror Story, where it's you get something completely different, but it's in the vein of what the original season was. And then you get callbacks if you want to. Not in this one particularly, but if it goes well, then if there's a third, it could do that.
I think it goes without saying that we both like the movie. First and foremost.
The picture that we took after we got out, the immediate reaction was just our jaws were on the floor.
I usually only have that like reaction to like a cheesy gordita crunch, but that was awesome. It was the cheesy gordita crunches of sci-fi movies. Yeah, I agree with you where it structurally, and this is, we're not going to give away anything. It's just the way they structured the movie. It felt like I was watching The Shining meets like Invasion of the Body Snatchers meets The Martian. It was amazing, and I never felt that it was a change. Like it didn't feel like a sudden change in tone or anything at all when like you see these kind of like events happening.
Some people disagree, though.
Some people disagree, but they're stupid. But it's okay.
Dismiss it. No, the third. People do have a problem with the third act and how it does change gears and does what it does. I don't have a problem with it because I was entertained the whole way through.
And basically, the one thing that happens at the beginning of the movie is that Mary Elizabeth Wanstead's character, the female lead, finds herself in this weird like basement, like a, how would you say like a. What do
yeah,
they
it's
call
like
it?
A
like
small
a hangar.
Safe room. Yeah,
like a small hangar underground, and seemingly is being trapped by John Goodman's character. Mm-hmm. And probably the first 15 minutes that she's in there, she's trying to break free, and it reminds you a lot of The Martian, where it's like she's not trying to just like sulk and say this my life's over, whatever. It's like no, she's trying to break free, and then she never really loses that throughout the movie.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad you bring that up.
And a lot of people that would have complained about it saying, hey, you know, maybe like how is it she's able to kind of pick up random stuff? Her character, you could tell from the beginning, was like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's someone that's very handsy, very quick on her feet. That was really cool. And it definitely never, she doesn't become a different character at the end like some other movies were. Like, this reminded me a lot of like Ripley from Alien.
Okay, I can see that.
Where she, like, she was...
Resourceful. She's not a damsel in distress. She never is.
Yeah, she's never at all. And in the beginning of the movie, the only time she really shows weakness is when she leaves her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the very beginning of the movie.
It's the theme of her running away. Yeah. That's, like, the common thread throughout, but...
Yeah.
It should speak to the fact that there are only three main characters in this piece, and you speak to her doing a wonderful job. John Gallagher Jr. is great in it as well, in the role that he plays. But John Goodman is incredible, and it's going to be almost impossible to talk about this part. So I don't know how to preface this other than to say it was amazing.
It was really good. What I'll say, and in the trailers, you get some hints of it where. Mm-hmm. Every time you hear his voice and they show a shot of him, he's always kind of looking at, like, he looks at the camera and kind of always has this look that he's trying to see what you're trying to think. Mm-hmm. And John Goodman is pretty much doing that the entire movie, where he's in control, it's his hangar, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's trapped in there, and that's all I'll say about it, but he is really, really scary.
And I will say that the casting of John Goodman, because I think he's pretty much universally, like, considered a likable character and a person that doesn't, not that he doesn't challenge himself, but he'll play like quirky characters, but he won't go in the directions that this particular role asks him to go in. And I thought that was awesome because it plays with your expectations the whole way.
And there were interviews when the movie was being released initially that the director David Trachtenberg they asked him, like, why did you cast John Goodman? Like, what, like, even though he's a really great actor, why would you cast him in the lead for someone who's really creepy? He's never really been like that. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, like, when you look at it, I wanted to cast someone that you would feel comfortable
with.
You want to trust mm-hmm. John Goodman. I'm not going to cast somebody like Jack Nicholson, for
or like
instance,
Michael
where
Shannon
you know,
or something like
that. Yeah, where you're like, he's creepy already. You're not going to warm up to him. It's right. like when someone that you want to give your trust to, but don't fully understand why they're doing what they're doing, that's more frightening than seeing someone right from the beginning trying
Absolutely.
To do that.
And I noticed it when I was watching it. There were moments that he would make you question how likable he normally is.
Yeah.
And you just wanted to fight against it and be like, no, I like you. This is totally fine. We're good. Everything's fine. And then
he
escalate.
Twerks in the movie too. So that's random. Yeah. He does a slight twerk. So like we have our first great performance of the year and it involves a twerk.
And I have to give credit to, there's no way to pivot away from that.
Yeah.
I have to give credit to Damien Chazelle because I actually read that he's the writer and director of Whiplash. He helped kind of reshape this story to be the Cloverfield version that it is. He gets a lot of credit for actually shaping the Howard character into what it is.
Really?
So a lot of the subtleties and just the can't tell you exactly what's going on, but what makes John Goodman's character work had a lot to do with him. So.
Yeah, that when you mentioned that to me when the credits were rolling, that the first thing I thought, I'm like, well, that's really interesting because who do you really, it's really random. It's like, who do you give credit to, whatever. But at the end of the day, what's really awesome about this movie is that you don't have to go in knowing anything. Technically, the only thing you need
it's
to know about Cloverfield is that it deals with aliens. That's it. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see a science fiction movie that isn't mega, like big on epic scale. It's really small.
It is understated.
And like this movie, like kind of is a throwback to movies like The Thing, where there's aliens involved, but you're still trapped within a small, like, area. It's very claustrophobic, and that helps make things creepy. And it makes you kind of, from a director's perspective, it helps you kind of play with every inch of space that you have.
And every expectation that you have as a viewer.
Like, from a physical perspective, like, when every time John Goodman's character opens the door to visit Mary Elizabeth Winstead, it's fucking terrifying.
The sound effects
in
this movie
are incredible.
It's so fucking
loud. It's ridiculous. Mm. Every time they would do that, I would look at Jen, I'm like, fuck. Like, it's like something
the first
bad
time it's
that.
Annoying, and then you're like, oh, okay, they're consistent. This is great.
But it was great. From top to bottom, like, writing... to be able to be disciplined enough to not to say it's like, since Bad Robot did produce this, it's like they're on a roll right now, to be able to be disciplined and say, let's do the story as is. We don't have to be over the top with it. You can make a case that the ending when you watch it is a little over the top, but it wasn't like freaking Star Wars. You know what I mean?
People would have been disappointed if they went in the other direction. So they're not going to please everyone. And I like that throughout the entire film, everything that's told to you matters.
Yeah.
So every detail that you see from the moment the score kicks in at the very beginning of the film to the very last shot, everything fits together. You don't put a weapon in a scene without using it. You don't put, there's just a little detail about her characterization is used later in the film. So it's very economical. It's a really well done script.
Yeah, it was the script that Dilly really, Dilly.
It's a pet name. Okay. Keep it together, man.
It's funny I said Dilly because Sean's GoPro camera looks like a dildo. And we nicknamed it Dilly.
No, we God. Almost made it.
Sean, what do you have to say about that?
We almost made it.
Dylan. It's not Dilly, it's Dylan. Oh, okay. Man. No, but basically what I was saying to get back on point was that the script was very, like, was able to show through it in the movie.
Yeah.
And it was really good. And after the movie, I asked you, I'm like, well, I've never heard of this director before, but is there anything that made him kind of stand out in the movie? And looking back on it now, when you watch the movie, you're going to know that he was able to get the best performance out of Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman. And that's saying something.
Yeah.
And sometimes directors, yeah, you could be like a Steven Spielberg where everything just looks, you know, when you're watching a Spielberg movie.
Sure.
In sets, and music, and everything. Sometimes directors are able to get really good performances out of their actors. Like you can make, like for instance, like David O. Russell. Not necessarily a flashy visual guy,
yeah.
But he gets awesome performances out of his actors.
And that's why actors love working with him.
So. Yeah, so this guy definitely has a future when it comes to actors. They're going to see this and they're saying, wow, this guy, you know, I want to see what he can do.
And I hope that he pairs up with Bear McCreary, the composer, again, because yeah. It felt like a Hitchcock movie, just listening to how...
The posters, everything's been kind of tizzed as a Hitchcockian kind of movie.
Totally, but I love it. I loved it.
I've never seen a Hitchcock movie.
I'm glad you, like, said that. I was going to throw you under the bus, but yeah. We're going to have some kind of, like, retro, real,
I can't be considered
film
a film
thing.
Person and not... I'm sorry.
Just what we need to see one. So let us know which one you think he should watch because that seems to be a point of contention. I think we've said all
That's
we can say
it.
Without ruining
yeah.
it.
I would say like I think there's a good theme going on here right now. Like we wanted to watch Midnight Special. That's on limited release. Once it becomes closer,
we're in Connecticut.
Yeah, we're in Connecticut. Kind of sucks. But once it gets wider release, we'll review it as soon as it comes out. But I think this is really cool. Like going back to what I said about science fiction genre. I think as a whole, the B movie genre. That being able to make a movie that probably cost $10 to $50 million to make, recently there's been a lot of good movies like that. The Witch, this movie,
The Gift
from last fall,
yep.
And then obviously now Midnight Special's coming out to really good reviews. You have The Nice Guys coming out later. It's the B movie genre seems to be reinvigorated. There was a lot of complaining going on from fans saying there's either a big studio movie
or a tiny indie film that's Oscar.
There's a tiny indie film that wins an Oscar. So it's nice to kind of have that genre kind of return and say, hey, if you want to watch a random sci-fi movie, Midnight Special, 10 Cloverfield Lane, you can do that now. Only problem is you got to go see it. And
that's
this
the thing.
Is one that you have to go see.
And it says to studios that you can make $200 million off a movie and still profit. It's okay. Like that's.
Yeah.
You don't have to be greedy all the time. Just make good quality stuff. I think we both say, in the spirit of Roger Ebert, two thumbs up, four in that case, but whatever. Side note. Stick around for next. Later this week, we're going to have a Batman v Superman review.
Batman v Superman.
Preview
and review. That's the big, for comic book movie fans, this is the biggest movie that's probably going to come out this year. This is the most anticipated for both good and bad reasons. So
I'm more excited for Civil War, but.
Yeah, but
I'm a company girl.
You know what you're getting with Civil War. We don't know what we're getting with Batman v Superman. But look out for the preview, and then look for the review as soon as that movie comes out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So stay tuned. I'm JP Lee. This is Adrian Aldrett. And for Exit Only Theater, we'll see you when the credits roll.